Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. Jim Browdy and Marjorie. Yes, the slow food movement is still in vogue, but last year Market Basket took it to an extreme. For 2 months, you remember this, the fate of Market Basket was unknown. Last June, a year ago, when Arthur T. DeMoulas was fired as the CEO of the homegrown franchise, local employees, 25,000 of them, risked their jobs in protest, demanding that Artie T., as they lovingly call him, be reinstated. It was a summer of massive employee rallies, high-stakes boardroom drama that ultimately ended with Artie T., can't believe I'm calling him Artie T. Artie T. back at town. 1 year on Market Basket is thriving. It's making even more money. Here with us in Studio 3 to look at all the ingredients that make this a success and assess where they are now is Nancy Kane. Nancy is an historian at the Harvard Business School. She holds the James E. Robeson Chair of Business Administration. Her latest book is Ernest Shackleton, Exploring Leadership. Hello, Nancy.
Hey there.
Well, you know what I think is incredible? I remember analysts at the time talking about, oh, he's going to have to borrow all this money, RDT, to buy out his brother. $1.6 billion, that was going to mean they were going to not be able to discount as much as they had been. They're going to take away these generous profit-sharing plans for their employees. But that hasn't happened. No. They're expanding. They're doing wonderfully. I mean, this is kind of an unusual example, is it not?
It's amazing. I hadn't, before this story came on our docket here, or came on Chelsea Mertz's suggestion list, I had been thinking about it in kind of the vague recesses of my mind, the summer of Market Basket. Yeah. I think we did, the three of us did several shows on it.
Oh, yeah.
And I talked on other GBH outlets about it. So it was such a big deal. And the interesting thing to your observation, Marjorie, is the reverb has from all accounts by all, you know, kind of public source information that we can get been very, very positive. The according to Arthur T., who sat down for an interview with the Boston Globe, dear listeners, I'm quoting from a story published the 27th in the Globe. 1 year after walkout, Market Basket is thriving, by Casey Ross. According to an interview, they're paying down the debt, $1.6 billion, much faster than they thought. Sales were very, very robust over the last year, more than they expected, even though they took somewhere between a $530 and $605 million hit in lost sales over the course of the 2 months that the stores went empty because workers refused to work and drivers didn't bring food to the stores and lots of customers migrated to competitors out of need. P.S., right? Those folks have more than come back. They've opened five stores. They're planning two more, including stores with a more upscale assortment of merchandise and fixtures. Lots and lots of emphasis on healthy food. And they paid out hundreds of millions of dollars in employee bonuses. So it looks pretty – and this is not trivial. It sounds small, but I think it's a big deal. RDT or Arthur T., the family member, I believe they're cousins, Arthur S. and Arthur T. Arthur T. has replaced much of the board with people that kind of have drunk his Kool-Aid. So it sounds like he's doing what he always wanted to do when he was running the company when his cousin controlled slightly more than half the stock. He's doing what he always wanted to do, which is run it his way,
yeah.
Right? Which includes all kinds of unorthodox business practices. I'm not talking about paying your employees well and knowing the names of their parents and having a sick fund and things like that. I'm talking about he didn't present a lot of financial data to his board. I mean, he was an iconoclastic, unusual CEO when he ran it before he was fired, and I believe he still is. But now he has a board and control of the company to do it his way. No one in the workforce that I know is publicly complaining. So it's a very interesting year-long anniversary story that we're talking about.
I also want to address one piece of speculation one of the questions we were all asking, particularly as it came to a close, a successful close, was, okay, are there going to be people who really never went to Market Basket who all of a sudden, in solidarity with the whole deal, treating your employees well, your employees being loyal to the boss? I am the perfect example. I don't know if I'm aberrational. I live about a mile from a Somerville Market Basket. I would say I drove there prior to this whole thing a year ago, maybe 10 times, went in once.
In years? This is over the course of years.
Maybe 10 times. I mostly go to Whole Foods, a little bit of Star Market. But every time I went there, I couldn't get a parking space because it was so packed. I would say 75% of my shopping now is at Market Basket,
really?
Even if I have to wait for a space. And it's beyond the fact that you have colossal value. I mean, that even though that X percent automatic discount, I think, expired on December 31st or whatever it was, you get sucked in by the notion that this is a place that actually honors all the rhetoric that we've been spouting forever, that not only treating your employees well is a humane thing to do, but it's also a good business model, which is one of the things we want to talk to you about. But then you get caught up in the whole thing and you feel good about it. And I'm not exactly a feel-good kind of guy, and I love it.
No, you have Jobian qualities to you among many of your other lovable
attributes. That's what I was going to say, but I'm
attributes,
glad you did.
Jim.
Thank you.
But just to put some color, as we say at the Harvard Business School, on what Jim's saying, I went deeper in this article. So the company is on track to bring in about $4.8 billion in total sales, dear listeners. Their sales are up about, I believe, 3-4% this year. So there are people, sales are up 3-4% in 2015 relative to an industry average of about 2-3%. So they're ahead of the industry. So there must be others, Jim, that are feeling like you, that are coming in, not necessarily loyal before the strike, but coming in now, right? Partly to find out what the magic secret sauce is, or the fairy dust is, and staying, because that's really interesting. And they paid out, I just looked, dear listeners, $129 million at the end of 2014 in employee bonuses. So something is going very, very well here. And I do believe, I've said this before in the show, we've talked about it, that there is a new world here of consumers now factoring in how businesses do their business, how they treat employees, how they treat the environment, how they treat animals, and that is becoming an increasingly important part, not in a very orchestrated, directed way, but in the rapid fire, integrated way that consumers make decisions about where they purchase, what they purchase. That's becoming an increasingly important part of how they make their choices. And I'm sure Market Basket is benefiting from that.
You know, can someone check my math in the control room? When you mention $129 million in bonuses and they have 25,000 employees, quick math in my head, that's $5,000 an employee? That is a huge amount of money. Please correct me if I'm wrong about that. But, the 25,000 employees, $129 million, I think it's 5,000 apiece, but I could be wrong. Listen to this one line from the Globe magazine when they recognized the employees of Market Basket or whatever it was. Market Basket employees were the Bostonians of the year. Research appears to bear this out. Well, you'll hear what they bears out in a minute. Historically, stocks of publicly traded organizations, this is a private company, it's not publicly traded. Publicly traded organizations on the Fortune 100 best companies to work for have outperformed the Standard & Poor's 500 and the Russell 3000 indexes, according to so-and-so. The point being, again, and this is, I want you to affirm this or reaffirm this if it's true, that essentially treating your people well is not only a nice way to be, but apparently the records, not just the Market Basket, suggests it's also good for your bottom line.
It is good for your bottom line. There's all kinds of quantitative, not just qualitative, not just anecdotal, not just storytelling, all kinds of quantitative evidence. This, you've mentioned one piece of it, the correlation between the stock market performance of public companies that end up on the Fortune Best Places to Work index and their market value. There are other very interesting examples of this as well, and quantitative studies correlating literally how companies treat their employees with what their stock price is, and that correlation is strong, demonstrable, and consistent. So it may come as a surprise to lots and lots of folks that want to espouse, sell high, right, and buy very low, including taking lots and lots of costs out of the hides of your employees, that guess what? Actually treating your employees well, giving them a career path, offering them benefits, treating them with respect, creating the kind of culture that supports that. Guess what? That delivers service, loyal customers, all kinds of productivity and engagement that translate to real increases in the bottom line and therefore increases in the stock price. It sounds revolutionary, but it really isn't. It's just good common sense, not to mention decent long-term value-creating ways of doing business.
$5,160 per employee bonus is a pretty nice bonus.
It's a nice bonus.
You know how there are certain places you go into and you look and the the employees look like they, you know, are working in some death spiral farm or something. They look, I mean, they just look depressed and
try
put
calling
upon.
Lots, yeah, like 1-800 customer service lines,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I mean, and you see, and it's just, and shopping is a big deal. I mean, I don't go to Market Basket only because it's too far. I mean, it's a long hike for me to get over to Market Basket, especially at rush hour traffic. But I was going over there when I was doing stories on it when I was still at the Boston Herald, and it was unbelievable. This is when the shelves were half empty. You know, the upbeat of spirit people had, it was really amazing. People that were losing their jobs, mm-hmm, or risking
losing their income, a minimum,
losing their income. It was unbelievable. And you go to other places. I don't want to get anybody in trouble necessarily, but we're talking a sad sack situation there where people look miserable. And it just kind of, if you're going to spend 45 minutes in doing grocery shopping every week at a minimum, and some of us spend longer, mm-hmm, you don't want to be dragged down by the ambiance or lack thereof, you know what I mean?
I think this is true in lots and lots of different encounters, and not just, you know, in person. I think phone encounters are like this. Anyone that's ever dealt with emailing questions about a product or a problem you have with a product or a service know exactly what we're talking about. I mean, the experience of service, the experience of buying things, the especially if it's person to person, is a big deal. And we're not just talking about retail companies. We're talking about all kinds of companies. I just finished a week of coaching with 65 advertising folks who had never been through this kind of program before. And we start day one. This is at Babson for Omnicom. I've talked about it before. We start day one with something called the service profit chain, which is a set of research that came out of the Harvard Business School and other places, although I believe the HBS pioneered a lot of it in the early 90s, which was the idea that if you deliver breakthrough, forgive the jargon, breakthrough service to your employees, they will deliver great service to your customers, and you'll create this very profitable cycle in which lots of loyal customers, you know, talk, give you very great positive word of mouth, WOM, as we called it at the time, and they deliver, you know, great profits and lower costs, and that kind of creates more motivated, excited customers who like work, employees who like working with happy customers more than they do cranky ones, et cetera. So there's, again, nothing new from a commonsensical standpoint, but the bet here, here's the way, the interesting thing, and I don't know that this obtains at Market Basket, but I do think customers in the increasingly competitive and fashionable world of grocery retailing. I mean, one interesting thing is to think about.
Is it fashionable?
Well, think about it. Stop and Shop buying Hannaford's. That's partly about trying to get in on a world that now has Wegmans,
yeah,
Whole Foods, Trader Joe's, in which Market Basket is putting in prepared foods, not only prepared food sections that offer lots of healthy food and more organic food, but places to eat within them.
I know. I love that.
So this upscaling of the grocery store experience is a big deal. So the bet here, and I'm not sure that it's going on here at Market Basket, but it clearly is a piece of attracting customers, is you create a philosophy of dealing with your people and of your culture and of your values within the company, and that actually profits and robust revenues and growth result from that. So they are consequences, not ends. So in other words, instead of, oh my God, we got to get this much gross margin, and oh my God, we got to get this stock price, we say, here's how we do business. And what results from that are the kind of things that we're talking about in this article and in our own anecdotal experience. It's a very interesting, small but important shift on the part of managers, business leaders, board members thinking. And I don't think lots of companies are ready to make it, but clearly those that are have enjoyed a lot of success, and it's long-term success. It's not as capricious and dependent on, say, input costs as lots and lots of more of what I would call harsher and more ultimately dismissive modes of running companies in relation to employees are.
You know, there are two things here. One, it seems we all agree, and you're the expert, so it's good that you're leading this charge. Treating your people well is good on many levels, including good for business. But this is like extreme. Let me just give you an example. Yeah. I mean, tomorrow night on Greater Boston, Joe Schmidt is one of the people who's going to join me. Unless I get it wrong, Joe Schmidt, Tom Trainer, I interviewed a ton of these guys. So when you start working, and they're in like their 50s or young. So when you start working at the company,
16.
Joe, when I was 14,
yeah.
No, really, when
True.
You start working, 14, and you've worked there how long? 47 years. I mean, it's one of these these things.
And their brother-in-law works there.
And some of them know people that married their spouse.
No, that's exactly right. Yeah. My son, my daughter-in-law, everybody
it's
works
also,
there.
It's also non-union, which is...
Let's spend a second on that we finish.
In part, this notion about organized labor is it's all about dollars and cents. Also about, I mean, as a former union organizer myself, it's also hugely about how you're treated. And these people were believed to be treated remarkably well. But the part that is amazing to me, that we almost made this mystical, both on the air and off the air, every time I finished a show on television, my former life at NECN, and they were on a lot, like once every couple of weeks, I would say to these guys, and there was an occasional woman, but it actually were more than occasional, but I'd say to these people, how did you work this out with Arthur T?
Yeah.
I mean, what was the strategy? We haven't spoken to him. Wait. Arthur T did not tell you, you worked there 42 years. You're telling me you walked off your job, your family's dependent on your income, and he never winked at you last week and said, don't worry, when I come back, no, nothing. And it came to the point where, who knows, I didn't give him a lie detector test. I assume they're all telling the truth. Their loyalty to this human being was unlike anything I've ever seen, except in a really small company when you see your boss every single day. It is so the good news, I guess, is further proof on a top of statistics that being good to your workers matters. But anybody who thinks they can emulate or replicate Market Basket has a hell of a long way to go.
They do. And, you know, I read an interesting article in preparing for this from, I believe, the Concord Guardian pretty recently about why was this so successful? Because it's non-union, right? And it's, as you said, it has these interesting, very unique characteristics, this family-run corporation. Workers, we talked about this last year, Jim, workers, risking their jobs, walking off the job in order to save a CEO's
job. Their only job in their life.
Right, multimillionaire.
Exactly.
Who in some ways sounds like a great manager. In other ways, doesn't sound like such a warm and cozy guy. Certainly the family relations are something out of Dallas, right, or Falcon Crest, or, some other torrid reality TV show. In any event, I think a number of things matter. This particular aspect, the family culture, the sense that you could come and build a career here, that's in shorter and shorter supply. Social media is a big deal, folks.
That's huge. That's a wonderful point.
This could not have happened in the same way in 2002. Social media mattered. The fact that you had not just what we traditionally call, and this term I think is more and more anachronistic, blue-collar workers, but you had managers. So some of the people on your show
– Managers, mostly managers. Mid-level
who, like,
managers.
Kind of helped gather and really, really create the glue and the energy, the flywheel for this. That's incredibly important. I actually think it suggests a whole new concept of thinking about workers that I won't call labor because that sounds like they're cogs, people that work for companies. So there were a lot of different things that went into this. I do think there are still great lessons for companies and for employees thinking about trying to make change, which have to do with new definitions of labor, right? The values of a company, the ultimate reasonableness of these workers. They were extraordinarily reasonable. Here's what we want. We're not fighting for more pay. We're not fighting for longer vacations. Here's what we want, and it matters to us because we think this is good business and the right way to run this company. They just had an extraordinarily powerful and worthy mission that it was really hard to take issue with. I don't care how much you supported the right of Arthur S. Demoulas and that faction to exercise their private fiduciary duty.
It's amazing. It's been a year, isn't it? I mean,
it was
the story of the year.
It was
just this wildly inspirational, great lesson for everybody.
And P.S., two films coming out about it, documentary films. So, dear listeners, keep your eyes open. Two of them coming out. One at the end of this year and another one probably in early 2016. So this is real news. And I'm sure we'll all hear a lot about them before they air.
Well, I want to see the RDT talking more.
John Hamm is playing. You know, it's interesting you say this.
Wait
just very
minute.
Quickly, because no, I'm joking. We're out of time. It was one of the best moments for me? Because I'd never seen the guy talk, and I've never met
Neither
him.
I
would love to interview him. We'd love to have him on the show.
He's not very
media.
It's
when he finally stood up
friendly.
And on that platform the day. He's like an average guy.
Regular guy.
I'm sure he's really smart and really skillful. He speaks like a normal person. He doesn't come – weren't you expecting a guy 6'3", perfect looking, perfectly tailored, deep voice, whatever. And the guy was just a normal guy who obviously cares about his people, which is really pretty great.
Nancy, wonderful to talk to you as always. That was great. Nancy Cain is an historian at the Harvard Business School, where she holds a James E. Robeson Chair of Business Administration. Her latest book, Ernest Shackleton, Exploring Leadership. And she joins us every Tuesday for Open Mic.
And remember, next night, tomorrow night in Greater Boston, we'll have some of the Market Basket alums. Well, they're still there. The alums of the action will join me on TV.
Coming up, grown-ups are coloring inside the lines, literally. Adult coloring books are on the rise, back-ordered in some places. Are you coloring books to beat the band? Does this kind of idea appeal to you? That's next on 89.7 WGBH, Boston Public Radio.
I know all about the coloring book story. Oh, my.